Accession number 31408.
John Shoebridge, Reel 8. Sorry, go on.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, no, we'll just carry on, yeah.
Oh, right. What did I do then? No, I've forgotten. Yes. Well, I then had an unfortunate job, quite honestly. It was a good job, it was flight deck officer of one of the Korean carriers in Korea, the Ocean, which I spent, just over 12 months, about 13 months out in Malta.
53?
This was 52 to begin with, then 53, yeah.
The Korean War ended in 58.
In July 53, it did indeed, yeah, that's right. I went out to Malta in November 52, I think. Joined HMS Ocean there. We sailed for Korea in April 53, and we got home in December 53. So it was a hell of an experience. It really was. And I'm not. By nature, I'm not really a very practical person. I'd have been much better employed on a staff job than I was going to be on a thing like a flight deck, where is, of course, is the epitome of practicality. You really have got to be. And you're all right in ranging aircraft and doing everything like that, being command. I had a group of 90 ratings under me, including a chief PO and three petty officers. That was fine, but if you had a major crash on the deck, then you've got to be a very practical person indeed, as you'll appreciate. And I'm not really, never have been. But having said all that, you know, it was a good job. It was indeed, it was. I was unlucky in having a chief PO who was utterly hopeless and really a huge amount of a flight deck depended on having that chief PO who knew what he was doing, because he was the one who was going to carry out your orders. And if he didn't know what to do then, or got in the muddle, then it was a tangle. But we survived. But
so you were there, fine. So there were active squadrons flying off the ship to missions over Korea. And
I wasn't myself.
No, no, but I mean you were looking after the flight.
Oh, yeah, we had two squadrons on board. Oh, yes, indeed.
And what were they? What planes were
they? Fireflies and Sea Furies.
And
Fireflies were the bombers, you might say, and fighter bombers, and Sea Furies were the fighters. To protect the ship.
Did they fly any bombing missions over land? Or?
Oh, yes. Oh, entirely over land, yes. What we used to do, we sailed from Malta in, I believe, around about April, May time, April probably. We called through, it was quite an experience because I'd never been in that area before ever, through the Suez Canal, all along that way. We called for about 3 days in Trincomalee, which you will know is in Ceylon, or as it was in those days. Then we spent a couple of days in Singapore and then on to Hong Kong for a couple of days, and then we sailed straight on to Korea, or rather Japan, into Kure, which is on the inland sea, as again you will know, where the British base was. And then we spent from then, that was then probably end of April by then it was, until the Korean War ended, which I believe was in August, wasn't it? I believe.
July, I think.
July, was it?
July 53, I'm not sure.
Anyway, we had about five trips up into the Yellow Sea. The Americans, big aircraft carrier, they were on the west coast of Korea. We were on the eastern coast inside the Yellow Sea. And we used to patrol that side of it and fly off sorties to attack the, mostly as far as I know, some unfortunate peasants in farm vehicles, with an innocent yak or what animal towing the vehicle with some food for the next door village. And that was about it as far as I could see, but there you are. That's how these things work out. We would sail from Kure and we'd get up to the inland sea in about 2 days. We'd spend 10 days up there, 4 days on patrol, 2 days off, and no, one, yeah, 4 days on patrol, 1 day off, and 4 days on patrol, and then back again. So about 12-day round trip altogether. Then we have a week in Kure or Sasebo, which was on the main coast then nearer, and then back we go again. And the American carrier would do the same on the other side. Very hard work, 3 a.m, I would get up, range would start at 3:30, fly off 4:15, something like that. And I wouldn't leave the flight deck until about 8 o'clock at night, were all meals sent up there, and when I would come down, have a quick dinner, a couple of drinks, go to bed at about 10 o'clock and up again at 3 o'clock, and so that went on.
And you would, I mean, you had crashes, you had problems, so you had planes coming back?
Well, nobody was ever fired upon, or if they were, nobody was ever hit. But there was the odd crash coming back, which you had to clear and all that sort of thing, yeah. And then you had to arrange for the next morning, or then one lot landed, the panic to get them all down below and refuel and get the next lot up and arrange. It was a very, very hectic job, it really was. I can't say I enjoyed it very much, because I didn't. I'm not that. It's not for me, that sort of thing, but this thing had to be done anyway.
And again, fitting into this large ship, this time as an officer of the ships, rather than being a pilot, how was that?
Well, that again was quite different. Indeed, yes, it was. It was different. Yeah, it was. Such things as, you know, you were expected to be able to operate the crane, all that, so not work it yourself, but give instructions. Well, I didn't know to operate a ruddy crane, but you had to learn ruddy fast, actually. But it was an experience, though. And, of course, apart from that lot, we were there when the war ended, and we then had a most interesting and illuminating 10 days in Tokyo, which would have to be very heavily censored if it went into any of your books or anything like that. But,
shame, that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I've been to Tokyo, and I liked it very much, but it was probably slightly...
Well, of course, this was in the early 50s, and when wine, women and song were the main preoccupation, and... some lovely clubs. I remember actually once there was one club in Sasebo now, and that was we used to visit. We used to sit on the floor and be geisha girls sitting all round us, with feeding us with whiskey and mopping our brows and things like that, you know. The American captain used to come there quite a bit. Of their huge carrier was in there, great big thing, the Philippine Sea or one of their big ones. I remember once he made the epic remark, you can imagine a British captain being in there, can't you? Pigs might fly. He said to us one day, he said, why don't your captain come to the lodge? It's the Matsu Lodge, I think. Why don't your captain come to the lodge? Way below a British captain to come to the lodge, dear me. But the Commander Air came, well, the Commander Flying came once, I remember. But anyway, no, Tokyo was... It was great, really. It was great, yeah. But again, really, we didn't get... We should have... looked at the scenery and one or two things. We didn't get beyond the best bars available and nightclubs and things like that. Then we came back via Hong Kong, which we had a week there, 10 days. One of my chaps in Maxips, Brian Barlow, who is now dead, but he was with us from like the start too, Brian Barlow. He was quite influential in Hong Kong. He went to Charterhouse, I think, one of the big public schools, came from a good family. And he got a senior position in Hong Kong government there. Well, I think under the governor was one of the big five. I think he was not sure he wasn't in charge of all the police forces or something. He had a lovely house halfway up the rock. Up the hill. Mainly. Mm-hmm. And I went to dinner a couple of times there. Hong Kong was nice, though. Aberdeen Village, lovely fish there. Back via Hong Kong. Via Singapore, rather. The bowling there, bowls, you know, the bowl, open-air bowls, it was great stuff. Then back home again, and that was Korea, really, a hell of an experience. And I got married on the Boxing Day on the day after he came back.
The days of daring do were over. The Korean War, there's nothing... did you talk to pilots? I mean, I was trying to think of what was actually going on. You said you had the impression all that... They were just strafing.
Well, that's exaggerating the matter slightly. But no, the war was over, really. And I mean, the war wasn't any really... The danger of any of our fireflies over Korea being shot down was minimal in the extreme. You probably had a couple of chaps with two rifles aiming at an aeroplane doing about 300 miles an hour, about 1,000 feet above them, something like that.
There were no MiGs? Russian MiGs?
Not then.
It was tailing off, wasn't it?
It was tailing off completely. And there was, apparently, we heard, now how true this is, I don't know, but it probably is true. We heard unofficially that the Russians had been warned that if they or the Chinese ever atom-bombed one of the carriers, either the American or our one, then Peking would be atom-bombed. And they really meant it, the Americans. So, therefore, we weren't going to be attacked, really. From that. Whether that is true or not, I don't know. But it had a ring of truth about it, all this business. It really did.
And being in a war zone in an aircraft carrier, what was the drill there? I mean, this is...
The only special drill we used to do was when we landed on for the last time at day, there was a frantic panic to get the aircraft down and two Sea Furies ready on the catapults to be catapulted off should we be attacked by an enemy aircraft. But that was, as far as I'm aware, was the only real... We did have a destroyer with us, but, I mean, it was understood by the Chinese, I think, and the Russians very plainly that if one of these carriers were attacked, there were going to be all hell break loose.
Catapults, that's an interesting thing. How did you get on with those? I mean, they're...
All right. Well, the firebrands, we were catapulted off on the firebrands, but all right. It's a bit like the Big Dipper. But once you've done it once or twice, you know this. It's a strange... The first time, it's a strange feeling. You're on the catapult. You drop your hand, which means you're ready to go. The green flag goes. And you leave your stomach behind. And then, literally, one second, you're sitting still on the catapult. The next second, really, you're airborne off the end of the ship, sinking slightly, but flying away.
And being a someone responsible for the flight deck, dealing with catapults, was that a problem? Because it was a complex piece of machinery, but I suppose there were...
None at all, no. No, there was an absolute easy, simple routine. Absolutely simple routine. The flight deck, you have a flight engineer controlling everything, me with a big flag, petty officer behind me, and the pilot with open cockpit. And the pilot would be taxied on, my flight deck party would get in position, hooked on, onto the catapult, and then he would open right up. And then when he was ready to go, he would drop his hand like that and grab the control. I would drop my flag, the control up, the engineer officer would pull the handle, and off it would go. And then the next one would come rushing up. So it's a steady routine of 12 or 15, 20, all going off all at one time.
Okay. Good. So we're coming back now. You're back in the UK. This cruise is over.
Cruise over.
Do you go back to flying?
Not really, no. I had two staff jobs, and then...
Well, these staff jobs were...
Nothing terribly special, in actual fact. I was staff officer of a big RNVR air division, which is stationed at Littlehampton. There were about, I suppose, total 200 people in it all together, which was quite a big job in its way, really. It was certainly a very busy job. A big disadvantage of that was that I would work at weekends and have my weekends on Tuesday afternoons and Wednesdays, which wasn't much fun in a way, really. But although, of course, you had a bit of a weekend with the RNVR boys because you were expected to be in the wardroom in the evening when they were there, certainly on a Saturday evening anyway, and join in with them and, inspire them to greater things, so to speak, or something.
And did you miss the flying? I mean,
Not all that much. I still flew. I mean, you had to do...
Keep
I think
time up, I suppose.
Well, to keep your flying play, you had to do about 30 hours a year, I think, which were about three flights a month or something like that you would do. So I used to take one of the Fireflies from the VR squadron and have a gentle meander around Littlehampton and over the Channel, look at the Isle of Wight and sort of meander around a bit and sometimes take one of the Wrens up with me or one of the ratings who served the airplane they wanted to fly, you see.
But so you are now in your early 30s.
Early 30s, then,
and
yeah.
And we're coming up then now towards Suez, aren't we? Suez, that's the next...
I was at Caldoz when that happened.
56.
Though.
Okay, well, all right, so I don't want to... So you do the two staff jobs. I mean, is there anything that you think is important to talk about? I mean, I don't really know what... I mean, it's an administrative job, I suppose.
They were administrative jobs.
Management jobs, basically.
Management jobs, yeah. There wasn't much to talk about in either of them, really, no. Not really, no. Hmm. And then, well, then the time came when... Was it Duncan Sands, I think, decided we were going to have a major cutback? And as I told you earlier, you know, I had a look at the numbers of lieutenant commanders and the rough prospects of promotion, decided that...
This is 58.
This is 58, 59, yeah.
Because we just... I mean, Suez is the major sort of foreign expedition at the time. I mean, you were in the service.
I was, yeah.
What kind of feedback did you get? Because I've heard stories that there was a real anger in certain parts of the service against what the government was ordering its men to do.
Not that I'm aware of at all, no. No, I've never heard that before, no. I know since it's been almost problematical, and possibly rightly so, but at the time, no, not at all, no, not at all. Either from people like myself, or from people. Ron Creighton will tell you more. Smokey Cowley, who died quite recently, and he was in this Firebrand squadron, actually, with me. He used to share a cabin with me. He ditched in a Wyvern, actually, off Suez. I don't think I'm aware of any upset about it in any way whatsoever, no. No, it was just a job to be done, and we were doing the right thing.
And what were you doing there? You were based at Culdrose?
I was at Culdrose at the time, yeah.
And what were you doing? That was
a staff job, yeah, indeed.
Staff job again.
I wasn't involved in Suez at all, no.
Didn't impact you in any way?
No way at all did it impact, no.
So then we come up then to the end of your period of service.
That's right, yeah.
58, 59, and there's a dramatic cutback.
Yeah.
And you look at the list and decide that...
I decide the chances of getting promoted might have been about 1 in 5 or 1 in 6, something like that. And also, having got married, really, the attraction of charging around from one place to another and never settling down really had palled quite a little bit, actually. So I wasn't altogether upset. The only thing was to getting somewhere else, something else to do, of course. And that turned out as it happened, this Midland Bank thing. I think Lloyds did, and I believe NatWest did as well, or Westminster as they were in those days, I suppose. It worked out.
And this was a special induction for ex-officers?
That's right, yeah, ex-officers. Yeah,
and there must have been, as you said, quite a few around because there was this cutback.
Yeah, I mark you, I don't think many in the most of the big cuts back came in the Air Branch. We were far more overstaffed than anybody else by a very long way. I don't think many were interested in the bank at all, which is understandable. But I was, and it meant living in one place, and, you know, and it suited me. Did I tell you one story? Have I forgot to tell you? I believe I did, perhaps, about the American carrier when we left Korea.
Yeah, no, you didn't tell me.
Well, this is worth telling, then. No, the day we left Korea, coming home, we were paying off. The ship was paying off. We were flying our paying off balance, and the white ends and all that sort of thing, Union Jack. And we'd clear lower deck, leaving Sasebo, and this huge American carrier, it was the Philippine Sea, actually. She cleared lower deck, and you know what clear lower deck means.
I'm sorry,
well,
I was going to ask
well,
you.
Clear lower deck means, I'll show you a photograph of clear lower deck before you leave here, it's in the bedroom, means the whole, a vast lot of the ratings all line up on the flight deck, under petty officers and chief POs and officers and that, all along the flight deck. And you sail past, and the people from the harbour, as you go out, there's the captain of the harbour master, are all saluting as the ship goes out, clear lower deck, that's known as. No, so they clear lower deck, a whole lot there, we clear lower deck. And as we sailed past, this was absolutely great. They were pathetically grateful, the Americans in Korea, for the help given by the other nations, because they took, 90% of it, let's be honest with you. 80% certainly. And of course the British far more than anybody else, apart from the Americans. And as we sailed past, their band played God Save the Queen. Wasn't that absolutely great? And their captain was on the flight deck saluting this huge American carrier, about four times our size. It's absolutely great.
Brings tears to your eyes.
Yeah. Anyway, we were talking, we were saying that.
So you come, yes, I was just thinking that we're at the end, you were leaving the service. Did you leave it with regret? Was it
Yes, I did. Oh, yes.
You talked to friends, because you must have had other friends in similar conditions that people would have...
Well, I did leave it with regret, really, yes, but with mixed feelings. I really was getting a little bit fed up with moving about every 2 years, really. I really was. Also, if there was no prospect of getting on any further, then it meant, say, another 7 or 8 years of doing desk jobs, probably still flying, keeping a flying pay and flying, but occasionally, but not in a squadron again or anything like that. I wasn't altogether sorry, and I was overall, I thought it's a good thing to move out now.
Did you see any writing on the wall in the fact that the services, you know, east of Suez was over, that it was the end of empire? I mean, maybe this is...
No, I didn't, actually. Although people now tell me that, particularly a girl called Kay Butcher, who's taking out this week to a pub lunch, she's about 55, I think, but She was the widow of the commander here at Coldrose who died recently, and very early on he died. I mean, he's only 49. She says the service is just nothing like it was at all. It really is. It's just almost an inferior civilian job. No, sounds a great shame to me, but she, the Navy is nothing like it was.
But you had no intimations of that when you decided to leave?
None at all, no.
Okay.
All this has happened, I think, in the last 15 years.
Sure. Well, I think we've done and dusted it, really. I mean, as you say, we could have talked for days and days.
Well, you could go for days and days,
but I think we've had a good look. Is there anything else that you I'm just trying to think of anything else that you feel incidents that we've missed out on, or it's difficult to say now? But
it's difficult to say, really. I don't think so, really. Nothing other probably is. Once you've gone, there'll probably be five or six things I said. I wish I could have mentioned or forgotten to mention. I don't.
And adapting to civilian life for you, it wasn't. By the sound of it, it wasn't at all a pain.
Well, it was. Well, it didn't seem so at the time. No, but when I look back on it, it took me about 6 years probably to adapt, really. What I did miss most of all was the comradeship and the support in the Royal Navy, whereas everybody, even in a bank, which is a more close-knit unity than some set-ups are, such as Tesco's or something like that probably, but there wasn't the same backing and support. Everybody's out more for themselves than for the thing as a whole. And that, to me, was very noticeable, really. But other than that, I don't think there was really, no. It was, to me, it's what I wanted, was a steady job with a steady income coming in, and as far as I knew at that time, a steady pension, which it all was. It's not now, but it was. Even when I retired 15 years ago, it's a lie, 22 years ago, it was still a very steady job even then. Hmm. And after travel all over the world, I did all the travelling, really.
You've done it.
I've done it, yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, not at all.
Great. We've done, let's see if we've done...